and welcome to this month's episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes. My name's Emma Burnell. I'm a political journalist and playwright, of which we will be talking slightly more later at the end of the show. I'm here, as always, with my esteemed colleague, Professor Steve Fielding. Steve, are you still technically called Professor? Are you Professor Emeritus now?
It's either Emeritus Professor or Professor Emeritus. I really don't know. So I've been translated to that higher state. Yes, that salaried higher state, yes.
Steve is now roaming free and writing everything in sight. So watch out for him in parks and bookshops near you.
Yeah, if I can be bothered to get out of bed, yes, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of retiring, definitely. Retiring, he says. I mean, I don't think I've ever, ever seen you so busy, so... but yes, so this month we are going to be discussing This England, which was a six-part drama about the start of the COVID pandemic, all based on factual accounts of the things that happened, largely inside of government, illustrated with a lot of individual cases of ordinary people, but mostly it was about the drama in and around Downing Street, what happened, what went right, what went wrong, what was Boris Johnson's fault, what was other people's fault. And Boris Johnson, of course, was played in this drama by a heavily made up Kenneth Branagh, an almost unrecognisable Kenneth Branagh, who looked like a sort of melted Boris. I didn't think it worked that well.
No, because they actually started off by showing, because it starts off kind of in 2019 with the general election, and the implication is Boris Johnson has, you know, just won this great victory. He's about to write this book about Shakespeare. You know, there's all this great hope and optimism. Everything's going to change, blah, blah, blah. And then along comes COVID. But during the course of that, they actually show actual Boris Johnson. So the transition from clips of actual Boris Johnson to, right, you know, to Kenneth Branagh. And he does, yeah, you're absolutely right. He is a kind of shorter, dumpier, fatter-faced Boris Johnson, if that's kind of possible. At the start, you jump a bit and go, oh, is this going to work? And I'm not sure it entirely does, because, I mean, Boris Johnson is a very difficult person to be, you know, well, not impersonate, or to at least evoke dramatically, because he's such a ridiculous figure. And he's got the hair, and that's kind of it, really. And the guffing, you know, all the guffing out of his gob. And so to do a serious, because I think it was maybe the first serious attempt to do anything with Boris Johnson, apart from just have a comedian with a wig on. And he kind of gets the voice right sometimes, but we can maybe talk about the Shakespearean theme throughout this maybe later, but he does a lot of Shakespeare quoting. And occasionally it sounds like Kenneth Branagh.
And Greek and stuff. And then, yeah, it felt like when you don't know what to do with Boris Johnson, but you want to make him look serious, have him do something in Latin.
Yeah, or more in this one, Shakespeare, because the title, which I actually, because of my Shakespeare is rather limited to the plays I did at A-level. I didn't realise the quote from This England is a quote from Richard II, and there's a famous quote about This England, this demi-paradise, this, you know, jewel in the sea, or whatever it is. And it's all like, isn't England wonderful? I didn't realise there was a second part.
Yes.
Which kind of sums up what this drama is. I mean, it's over 6 hours, is seemingly trying to say that England, and by England, of course, we mean Britain, sorry, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. England is, there's an ideal, and some people live up to that ideal, and it demonstrates who those people are. But actually, there are lots of people and lots of things in England which are by no means praiseworthy. Yeah. And that's kind of it, really. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's the ins and outs of trying to deal with a government emergency. And while they're showing that on a moment by moment, day to day level, they're also putting into that some of the kind of background to that, why they are in a state of unpreparedness, for example. In, I think, the fifth or sixth episode, they do have a discussion about why we ended up with an NHS that works like a supermarket on just in time timelines and why that's a problem. So I think that was quite good. I mean, overall, I have to say, I found the whole thing quite triggering. I had to watch it in short bursts because I had a very difficult pandemic. I think I've been very public about this. I had a bit of a mental health crisis. And I didn't realise how unready I was to go back into this. And I think, in some ways, there hasn't been that much discussion of this drama, not nearly as much as I would have expected. So I saw far less discussion of it than, for example, something we've covered previously with the Brexit, the unfinished war. So a drama about these players, you'd think would be much bigger on our little corner of Twitter. And I wonder if the fact that it wasn't was because actually a lot of us have just memory held that time to a certain extent.
I don't know. I mean, I did a sort of brief after I'd seen it. I did a brief kind of, you know, internet search and whatever. And there were a few reviews, and they all said the same thing. You know, it came out too early, and we can talk about that, about what that's valid or not. But I think it might also be, I'm not dismissing that, because I mean, when I watched it, I mean, I don't know whether, unless I was doing this, I would have watched it.
Yeah.
And then it's six episodes, and they're roughly about an hour each. And by the time you hit the third and the fourth episode, there are a lot of people who are dying. Yeah. There are a lot of people who are dying in very uncomfortable ways, which is how you die through COVID, you know, the breathing. And a lot of people apparently are dying unnecessarily in rather unfortunate, avoidable circumstances. And there's a lot of it. And had I not been watching for this, to just about to talk about it, I'm not sure whether I might have just stopped. Because it was, I mean, I had quite a good COVID, really. I was lucky, and I realised how lucky I was. And also, nobody in my immediate family and friends died of it. And nobody that I know actually got it, or at least got it seriously. But even so, you know, there were moments where it was upsetting. It really was. And I can't, anyone that was touched more deeply by it, I wouldn't recommend you watch it, which would be perfectly honest.
No, I'm the same. I mean, I would have stopped watching it if we hadn't agreed to watch it for this. And it was my suggestion, so I'm entirely to blame. And I don't think I'd realised how much it was going to hit me.
Yeah. But I also think it wasn't shown on, because it wasn't discussed, because it wasn't on the BBC. And I don't know if they offered it to the BBC. I don't know if Sky offered them more money. I don't know how many people watch Sky. I know that I don't subscribe to the Sky drama, so I won't say how I got access to these episodes. I mean, I otherwise would not have seen it. I couldn't have seen it anyway. So it should have been on the BBC. I wonder if the BBC were too scared, because although there are, you know, it gives Boris Johnson more benefits of the doubt than some people would have given him, it's clear, at least implicitly, where it's coming from, i.e., the government was to blame for unnecessary deaths, lack of preparation, like you were saying about the NHS, all kinds of things. I mean, it did it quite elliptically, because it did have characters that would say things and then it moved on.
Yeah, right? And also it did it slowly. So at first, and I think in some ways it mirrored the experience of people during the pandemic, in that at first you were really willing the government to succeed. And you felt like maybe the drama was also kind of being a bit generous to them at first. And then it just got more and more obvious how bad they'd got things. And then they brought in more and more of the various scandals, like the procurement scandal. The last episode was almost all the Dominic Cummings scandal. And I kind of, like, I get it. It probably was a game-changing moment in the narrative of the pandemic. But I think, fascinatingly, one of the things in the drama is this tension between the communications things and the actual doing things. And Dominic Cummings being far more about the way things look and how things act in focus groups, and other people saying, no, you've got to be driven by the data. And I think in some ways this drama fell into the same trap, that it was much more interested in that personal story of Dominic Cummings and his terrible failings and the communication of that than trying to find a way to dramatise the more complex story of giving your mates a bunch of PPE contracts.
That, yeah, I mean, when I did do my internet search on how this had been discussed, they virtually all the reviewers said it was too early. It's been made too early. And the reason why they say that is quite the obvious thing, because if our listener hasn't seen this, they will know. They won't know. It doesn't deal with Partygate.
No.
It was made before Partygate really became a thing. And
yeah,
so
you get a little tacked on bit at the end, don't you?
Which, yeah, and I understand the people who made it thought, what are we going to do? Because it was a dilemma they faced. And do we kind of reshoot things? Do we change things a little bit? Or what do we do? Do we just tack on that thing at the end? And that, you know, they obviously did the latter. And I think Partygate changes the whole perception of certainly of Boris Johnson and elements within that government. And the Dominic Cummings thing, and it felt like it didn't really make the point as to really why they were going on about the Dominic Cummings thing. And the point I'm trying to make is that yes, it was made too early, or rather it was made, they were trying to do too much. It was made too early in the sense that they hadn't got a clear, simple narrative about this whole thing. Because what went on in that period that it's covered is, you know, there's the nature of the Boris Johnson government, the attempt of Dominic Cummings to change the nature of government and the resistance that he got, COVID as well, the absolute screw-up that appears to be, at least on the basis of this drama, how the NHS is run, right? I mean, there's loads of failures in it, and how the NHS is run is one of them. There's stories of ordinary people who were unnecessarily killed, at least as far as this drama is concerned, subject to royal commissions and all of that. But lots of people seemingly died unnecessarily and in all kinds of different circumstances. That's a hell of a lot of stuff. And they seem to want to tell that story with lots and lots of narratives, rather than this is our position, right? This is what we think. And then they're going to make that run through the whole thing. So there would be a coherence. And maybe that was asking too much, but they tried to do too much in little ways. So in the end, it was like reliving through the COVID crisis. A lot of stuff happened and you weren't quite sure why and how and with what consequences.
My other major criticism is there was far too much bloody carry. Who gives a flying crap? Oh no, posh pregnant woman might be a little bit upset about something. Give a shit.
But this raises a question in my mind, because I mean, the way in which they did it, they were kind of giving viewers prompts, you know, little clues, but not really hammering them over the head with anything. Trying to maybe giving them certain information, but then not necessarily enough information to come to their own thoughts. And I wondered about the whole Carrie and the Boris, you know, nearly dying allegedly thing.
Is true, apparently. I mean, they're a very good journalism on the fact that he was genuinely 50-50.
Okay, well, fair enough, right. But the way in which it was treated, I mean, I wasn't sure. Were we meant to feel sorry for Carrie stuck up in number 10, you know, being pregnant, going, oh, I'm so cooped up and oh, got to do this. Look at the guest list for my baby shower, right? And all of that. And then when she's taking her friends around, was it evening, where she's going to have a baby shower? And then are we feel sorry for her? Or are we meant to really think this is an out-of-touch, entitled person when they then juxtapose her sort of flouncing around with a baby shower with then ordinary people in their little homes with a man and his wife dying of COVID?
Position. I think that's what we were supposed to see, but there was too much of her.
Yes.
For that to be that powerful. Yeah, it was too like, oh, look, Carrie's going through this again and Carrie's going through that again. And you were like a little bit, well, okay, but could we maybe like care less about Carrie and more about, you know, what's, you know, as you say, you're trying to do 12 different very complex storylines, maybe just do 11 and leave the pregnant wife out of it?
Yeah, although are we meant, was she a cipher anyway? Was she really there for us to, was she there to humanise Boris insofar as that was something you wanted to do?
Well, I'm sure she was, but if that was the case, that was unsuccessful because I just ended up, because I went into it being very, I don't really care about Carrie, and I came out of it thinking, fuck Carrie.
Yes, by the way, listener, this is going out as live, so we can't edit that swearing. And actually, Emma told me not to swear, or did I promise not to
swear? Tell you not to swear.
Okay, right. Well, you're swearing. I've not been swearing.
Always fall on this podcast. Always.
I've not been swearing for minutes, and now you're just throwing the S word around. Anyway, but yeah, there was too much of her. I don't know what the writers producers thought they were doing, but I think they thought they had to humanize Boris in some way. And that was one way. I mean, there's plenty of times when he's ringing up his estranged, presumably estranged children, and nobody's picking up and he's leaving messages. And then there's that really weird bit when he's apparently dying or he's going to go on the, not ventilator, whatever they called it. And there's this black and white kind of Ingmar Bergman dream sequence in which there are these women, including Carrie with a baby. And I'm not sure who all the women were, but apparently one of them was meant to be one of his grown-up daughters. Yeah. And they're all saying something. And is that meant to be feeling guilty? I mean, what's going on? Do I really care? Because that's the one thing, really, about it, that this kind of stood or fell on its dealings with Boris Johnson. And I think they tried their best to make him human, but I don't think you can make him. I mean, he's, you know, or sympathetic, I should say. And for me, I mean, I was watching it, and when he was kind of on the, you know, on the verge of getting on the ventilator, and he was going, you know, breathing, but we'd already seen lots of ordinary people dying. And, you know, I took into this already the idea that Boris Johnson screwed it up. He delayed unnecessarily, which there's a point that's made in this thing that does say that. And his faffing around for all kinds of reasons was responsible for lots of unnecessary deaths. And my sympathy level for Boris Johnson was almost zero. Mm-hmm. So when they spent so long showing how ill he was becoming, I mean, I actually had in my head, go die, right? You're responsible for this. My sympathy levels were at 0 points.
Well, and also when he came through the worst and then we're seeing him recovering, I think they did 3 or 4 times, oh, he can't walk up the stairs at Downing Street.
Oh.
And I'm like, and? Do it once to prove the point that he's still ill. That's more than enough dramatically, frankly.
Yes. So, I mean, I think they were onto a sticky wicket with Boris Johnson. I mean, the irony of, because, you know, with it being called This England, with Kenneth Branagh as Boris doing lots of quotes about from Shakespeare, with him meant to be writing this book about Shakespeare, there is a Shakespearean, you know, undertone to it. I mean, ultimately, you know, that quote.
To be fair, there was a Shakespearean undertone to Boris's entire, you know, I was about to say presidency because that's how it felt, but premiership.
But he is. Yeah, but was he I don't think he was, he could qualify as a Shakespearean character, really. I mean, I don't know Shakespeare that well, but...
I think he definitely could. He is hubris personified, and the arc of a Shakespearean character, particularly in a tragedy, would mirror Boris's quite well, actually.
Yeah, I mean...
I went to see Richard III just before Boris was forced out, I think. Certainly while it was all going on, and there were huge echoes, and it was quite, it was obvious to me that the reason for putting this production on now was because of the echoes with Boris.
Yes. I mean, it all depends on what your interpretation of Boris Johnson was, but I mean, I just think of him as someone who was dickish. And it was his dickishness that brought him down. It was his dickishness that got him to the point where he was, and then his dickishness that led to his demise. Yeah. And I don't know if dickishness...
That's not un-Shakespearean at all.
I don't know if dickishness is enough, but obviously you can invest his persona with all kinds of other things too. So, all right. So he could be turned into a Shakespearean character, but he wasn't. in this. Again, it's possibly because they wanted, there was too much like facts, there was too much stuff going on. They didn't stand back and go, this is our view of Boris Johnson, right? This is who he is, whether he was or he wasn't. Because, I mean, this is like, this is one of a many, many great number of attempts by dramatists to impose some sort of dramatic meaning onto contemporary political events. I mean, that now goes, you know, goes back to Shakespeare. Yes, of course, it goes back to Shakespeare. But with Shakespeare, he had, you know, they usually have a period of time where there's a distance between the events and then there's a bit of haziness, perhaps. And then the dramatist said, this is what it means. And it might not really have meant that at the time, because history's full of complex events. And the COVID crisis was sort of complex events with all kinds of, you know, origins and consequences. But the dramatist should have imposed their own meaning onto this. And that would have helped us better understand it from at least a perspective. Whereas I think they fell between a number of stools where they basically were trying to retell us the COVID crisis. And that's a lot of shit's going on. I swore then. A lot of shit's going on. Your duty as a dramatist is to tell us what was the most important, right?
Yeah.
And to give the viewer some discretion to make their own mind up, but you give them a little bit of a push. And there was not, it was good. I mean, I think it was a bold and brave attempt, but it was a flawed bold and brave attempt. But yeah, it's maybe perspective that only comes with time. Maybe the critics were right.
Yeah, I think there probably were ways of doing this. I might have done it through the eyes of a neutral civil servant kind of thing. And the neutrality of the civil service was in fact one of the interesting threads. The tension between Mark Sedwill and Dominic Cummings was brought to the fore quite a lot, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, but in personal terms. I mean, it wasn't really, you know, I mean, what was it really?
Well, they did have an argument that was quite clear, not them having an argument, but the Dominic Cummings theory versus the civil service theory.
Yes, there was a bit of, yes, that was a bit of a thing, yes.
So besides Boris Johnson, the other sort of key players were Dominic Cummings, Lee Kane, who seemed to just run around swearing and not doing very well.
Yeah, shaven-headed swearer, yeah.
Which I think might actually be the most accurate depiction in the show. Matt Hancock, who I felt got off very lightly.
Yes, I mean, he...
Amiable Wally at worst.
yeah, I mean, he said, yeah, bit of a weak willy. He was the one that said, you know, we need to lock down. But he said it in such a weak way that they just ignored him.
Yeah.
And he couldn't seem to get the NHS to do anything. That all those people on those Zoom meetings, because all the people on the Zoom meetings said, we can't do that. We can't do that. And actually it helped by the fact he was played by someone that was considerably more attractive than Matt Hancock.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness. Andrew Buchan, Matt Hancock does not deserve a portrayal by Andrew Buchan in any way. Andrew Buchan, of course, star of the previous episode when we did Party Animals.
So yes.
He's all grown up and health secretary now.
Yes. But although up to a certain point, Hancock got off easy in the sense he was just weak.
Towards the end, there was a bit more. So when he was trying to massage the numbers of testing, that was covered quite extensively. And then there was a quite funny throwaway bit that I'd completely forgotten about when they'd given the badge for carers.
Oh, no, yes. Yeah.
And I'd completely forgotten that had actually been a thing, but my God.
Yeah. So he comes off, he gets away with it lightly, really, doesn't he? But again, oh no, because at the very end, then they point out
Then at the end, again, as part of that additional, it came out after we made, they had him groping his...
breaking COVID lockdown rules.
Breaking COVID lockdown rules by snogging Gina,
her
name is.
No idea who it was. I mean, you know.
And then there's Dominic Cummings, who is portrayed more darkly than Benedict Cumberbatch.
You couldn't do it any less darkly than Benedict Cumberbatch, could you?
And just, I mean, in many ways, stuck with my prejudice as Dominic Cummings, which is he's just a grumpy teenage sod who's never grown up.
Very unpleasant. But and at times effective, but at times ineffective. So it's...
yeah, and I think what was quite clear is that sometimes that unpleasantness got results in the moment, but it created so much bad feeling that it was ultimately incredibly self-destructive and destructive for the project.
Yes, but I mean, but the whole Barnard Castle thing, which takes up most of the last episode and a lot near the penultimate one, I'm still not clear where that's meant to fit in with the whole kind of narrative. I mean, what the significance of that was meant to be.
No, the thing is, clear. I think the Barnard Castle thing, to me, did have interesting effects in real life, because I remember, I think it really changed. It was the moment that people went, the government were on our side, to the government are not on our side. But what, weirdly, if that's why that was in there, that wasn't there.
No.
You saw a bit of focus grouping, but it really wasn't the focus of the story. And I think, again, it's that media people love to talk about media people thing. So, you know, it went from being, you know, intensive drama about the heart of government to all the president's men.
Yes. Can Pippa get that second witness?
Source, yeah.
Source, yes. And that left me quite cold, really, because I thought, well, why is that there? Like you say, it's just like bolted on. Another thing about journalists. Because journalists weren't in it at the start. I mean, if there had been a thing like you're saying, maybe a kind of neutral civil servant from their perspective, or a journalist, you know, that would be more classical in these kinds of things, trying to find out what the hell's going on, and then it ends up, you know, with Barnard Castle, and maybe, you know, if they'd had the time. Partygate, you know, that might, that from that one perspective, but they just jumped to, you know, it's Pippa on the phone trying to find out, you know, and then they're doing a deal with the Guardian. It's like, yeah, okay, fair enough, but do I give a shit? No.
Yeah.
Because it didn't really fit in with the whole thing.
Drama to be done about Pippa Carrera, frankly, during these this time.
Yes.
But Paul Brand from the ITN. Like, those two were the ones who broke everything, essentially.
Yes.
But not tacked on to the end of all of this. No. I think the problem with this, I like the ambition, but I would have preferred it to be ambition with focus, and I don't think it was.
Well, they tried to get it all in one go, and unfortunately, by the time they got that in, there was another bit to be put in, which was then too late. But even without that, yeah, they tried to do too much. I mean, in 6 hours, you think you could do a hell of a lot. But in 6 hours, maybe you should just focused on one aspect of it. Or
I'm thinking about
something.
When we covered The Crown. Now, I stopped watching The Crown after we did it. I had no interest. And my criticism was that we got to the end of season two and the big season finale was Andrew is born. I'm like, woohoo. But in some ways, what The Crown has taught us is that slower, more kind of taking each event as it comes and really going in depth works quite well on a dramatic level when you're doing recent history.
Yes. But
this, as you say, I think each one of those episodes could have been a series of The Crown, basically. And might have been better as such, although I wouldn't want to watch 6 series of this.
No, but that, yeah, so it was, yeah, you're right. I mean, the ambition was great, but really they should have been slightly less ambitious.
Yeah.
You know, they should have really focused on Boris Johnson, you know, or Dominic Cummings, or ordinary people, or, you know, the people on the front line. I mean, because what emerged out of this is perhaps not so surprising that the heroes, that, you know, the first part of this England, quote from Shakespeare, the people that manifested why England's a great place were the frontline heroes, you know, the carers in those care homes, you know, the people that tried to make it all work, and in the hospitals that tried to make all those kind of ridiculous, well, the shortages
that,
and
that lovely woman who separated herself from her children to care for people in the care homes, and that was the real kind of this England.
And when that, and when that guy, was he called Johnny, I forgot what was his name, the one that died in the care home that those two carers were looking after, even though it put them at high risk. Bob, yeah, and after he died and they just embraced each other, you know, that was, that was really sad. That didn't make you cry. I don't know what would make you, what wouldn't make you cry, really. But so yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I think it got too, it got a lot of criticism. And there are things to be critical of, but I think it was, it was worth doing, but it should have been on the BBC. It really should have been on the BBC, because then more people would have talked about it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely agree with that. I mean, I would I recommend watching it? I think, well, I would say it's a, if it were something that wouldn't trigger you the way it triggered me, I'd recommend watching it. But I found it very, very hard, because it took me back to a very difficult place in my life. And I don't suppose that was a good place in many people's lives. So that is a problem with it overall.
No, if you'd, if you'd lost...
I mean, I didn't lose anyone. That wasn't, yeah, I was, you know, I had a good pandemic in that way. I was just on my own all the time. Yeah. I don't react well to that.
Well, yes. So, yeah, so it, I think I said that, you know, if you have lost anybody, I really would consider, you know, thinking about watching this, because it is grim. And, but,
and it,
but
does retire from the grimness, which I think is right. Dramatic, yes. Thing to do. It's just hard watching.
Yes. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, thumbs, definitely, you know, in a kind of weird way, thumbs up, because how can you do a thumbs up to a COVID drama? Yeah. And it's so terrible, what it, what it's looking at. But I would definitely agree.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, its job was to evoke those times, and it sure as hell did that for me.
Yes. So is that us? Is that us done on this segment?
So. Yeah.
Well, because before we go, Emma, if only because you've written to me in chat here.
You're giving away the secrets.
No, but you said it at the start, so I would have remembered. Emma, I understand you're a playwright, and that your play has been performed. What's the update on your play?
So my play that was on over the summer, Triggered, is having a second run. We sold out in the summer, so we're half sold already. We're going on the 22nd to the 26th of November at the White Bear Theatre in Kennington in London. And it's a play about the fictional deselection of a Labour MP. So it's completely fictional. Nobody is real in it. It's all based on, for a long, long time, there was a blog post going round and round and round in my head about the archetypes in the Labour Party. It's going to be called The Five People You Meet in the Labour Party. And I never got it down into a blog post. And eventually it got catalyzed into this play, Triggered. And nobody's a bad guy, and it doesn't take a position on whether mandatory reselection is a good or bad thing. It just gives you the arguments either way. And what's fascinating is that people from all across the spectrum have come to see it, all across the Labour spectrum, and people from outside of the Labour Party and Labour politics. And they all took a different, they all think it makes their point, which is great, because that really helps me feel like each one of the characters has made their argument well.
Right. Okay.
There's a lovely photograph of John Landsman, who set up Momentum, and Luke Akehurst, who runs Labour Win, the anti-Momentum, together at the play, both having enjoyed it.
I saw that. That was some coming together.
Only I can bring the Labour Party together, even if sometimes, because they all hate me at once.
Well, good. Well, obviously, we'll keep the listener updated about that. And
I'll put a link to tickets on the website.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll have to see if I can manage to get down.
That'd be lovely to see you if you can.
My northern, yes. Well, yes. The problem without belabouring this for our listener, because we should come to an end soon. But Avanti West Coast. Dear me, and I'm not swearing. Oh, dear me, that really puts you off travelling. It really does.
I'm off to Cardiff for a week next week, and I am driving because I just can't face getting a train anywhere.
Yeah, isn't that an appalling indictment of
Truss's
England? In so, I mean, subject to status, it may not be Truss's England anymore when you listen to this. Listener, could be somebody else's.
Yeah, God knows. Right, thank you very much, Steve, as always. Great pleasure to talk to you. And just a thank you to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And a reminder that this has been a Political Human production. And please rate and review us on whatever platform.